The effect of these changes were in fact quite impressive. By the mid-1920s, the major cities of Russia and the Soviet Union were well provided with grain and food. People were able to move back in the cities, and famine had certainly ended. There were in fact shops everywhere if you walked through the streets of any of these major cities, a major restoration of the previous life, and these shops were filled with all sorts of consumer goods. There were also cafes, various services. It really began to look like Russia before the war in many ways. And in fact, by 1926, this recovery had been so extensive that the economy had reached pre-war levels, had reached 1913 levels, which is a quite dramatic achievement when you recognize that in 1921, the economy was only at one-fifth of its pre-war level. By 1926, it had reached the same 1913 level. This isn't to say there weren't problems. There were lots of problems. Economically, there was too little capital to invest to expand the economy beyond these pre-war levels. And remember, the purpose of the socialist government here was not to simply equal conditions under the czars, which were considered to be quite poor for the majority, but to build up the economy in a way to lead to a prosperous society, to overcome backwardness. There were also problems with society, at least in the eyes of idealistic communists and their supporters. Workers of the 1920s remained a subordinate class. Real wages were below pre-war levels, even if the economy had restored that level. Unemployment remained a persistent problem, and workers at work itself lacked the sort of authority, the influence over hiring and firing and wages and working conditions that the revolution was supposed to be all about. And this was true whether they worked for private owners or even in state industry itself. In fact, all of this was reflected in a joke that many workers like to say, that the new economic policy, the initials of which are NEP, N-E-P, actually stands for the new exploitation of the proletariat. Housing conditions were also terrible in the cities, especially for urban workers, but indeed for everyone. The homes of the rich had been expropriated, mainly during the Civil War, and subdivided, but the conditions in these what were called communal apartments, where multiple families lived in the old flat of a member of the nobility of the bourgeoisie, were often terrible. A large family was lucky to have one room. Sometimes they had to have only a corner of a room. They all shared the same kitchen, the same bathroom. And the large numbers of peasants who began coming to the city as industry was restored only worsened situations. Crime was rampant in 1920s society, even though the revolution was supposed to end the exploitation, which Marxists said was the cause of crime. Robbery, hooliganism, muggings, murder were rampant. And prostitution, said to be a sign of the exploitation of women, was very widespread in the major cities of Russia. Compounding all this was the fact that there were nearly 1 million homeless children and teenagers in the country, most of them orphaned by the war and especially by the Civil War, who were wandering about Russia and the Soviet Union in the decade after 1917. Some of these also formed criminal gangs. Finally, from the point of view of the communists, it was very troubling to see so much of the old bourgeois culture return. Expensive restaurants only for the rich, cafes, casinos, decadent nightclubs, and the like. As this may suggest, one of the most serious problems in the 1920s was what might be described as a perceptual one. The painful feeling among many communists that NEP, though it restored the economy and prevented the type of dangerous rebellion that was brewing at the end of the Civil War, that NEP was a betrayal of the ideals of the revolution, or at least a temporary and necessary retreat that had to be ended soon. Now, these conditions were background to the huge debates of the 1920s. At issue, of course, was not just how to overcome Russia's backwardness and build socialism, though these were critically and at the center of these debates, but also, especially after Lenin died in 1924, but had already become quite infirm by 1922, who would guide Russia in the future? Who would be its new leader? And two influential individuals defined the outlines of this debate and indeed competed for deciding which group would be in power. The first was Lev Trotsky, also known as Leon Trotsky, a very important figure, a member of the Politburo, the leading body of the party itself, and a member of the government as Commissar of War, member of the People's Commissariat, the Council of People's Commissars.